Hello, my name is Rich Jones. I'm a co-founder of U-Turn and the Chief Clinical Officer of U-Turn Health, and I'm also a co-host of this wonderful podcast.
And my name is Liz, and I'm a co-founder of U-Turn and a co-host of You Learn, You Turn.
And let's get the show on the road.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to You Learn, You Turn. Today, I have one of our very own coaches, peer support specialist. Her name is Lauren Houck, and she is in our reentry and veteran programs here that she helps with people who have just come out of prison and are looking to get their life back together. And she helps those people as well as veterans looking to get back on their feet. And she's an all-around great girl. She has a great story for why she does this work. And we really just want to highlight the wonderful things that she is doing in our program. So welcome to our show, Lauren.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. I'm excited because I know about you a little bit because I've been in some company meetings with you, and I know that you and Hamilton share a love of salty words, and I love to hear y'all banter back and forth, but for the sake of bleeping things out, we'll try to keep this one a little bit
edited,
if we can.
I will try.
Yeah, we'll try. But anyway, I love that your personality is just, you remind me of like a female version of Ham. So anyway.
That's not the first time I've heard that.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. All right, so let's start with your reason for being here. And I think we probably need to back up a few years. You've been here almost a year. You're doing great things, but I know your life wasn't always this hunky-dory. So take us back a few years. Tell us what went on.
Oh my goodness. I don't even know where to start.
You were born?
I know, right? Well, I was born. By my mom and dad, obviously. Mm-hmm. Growing up, I was raised in an upper middle class family, white picket fence, perfect family, or that's what everybody wanted to see, or my family wanted to see.
Right.
Perfect family growing up, bottom line. I was three sport athlete in high school, all state basketball and lacrosse. I was a perfectionist growing up.
Wow.
Straight A's, everything. Everything had to be perfect. If it wasn't perfect, I wasn't doing enough. If I brought home a B, it wasn't good enough. In my mind, that wasn't good enough. And I was always pushing myself. My parents always pushing me. They just had high expectations. And junior year, I would say struggling, mm-hmm. to keep up with everything. Colleges were looking at me for lacrosse and basketball. My grades were slipping a tiny bit. And like I said, all the colleges were looking at me. And one of my friends, he's like, you should take this. And he's like, it will help you like stay on your game. And he's like, and you can study with this. And that was the first time I ever tried Adderall.
Ritalin or Adderall had to have been one of those.
Yes.
But let me just stop there for a minute. If there are any parents listening to this or school administrators, the pressure on these kids, I mean, I don't know how old you are, so I won't ask, but I know you're a lot younger than I am. So I'm 53, but the pressure on me was not so great. It was like, just get through, go to college. That's all we really expect of you. Now, not only are you supposed to be top of your sport or you won't get looked at, you have to have a 4-point something. You have to need the pressure on these kids. I hope to goodness that I am not conveying that message to my son. But so I can only imagine if someone said, take something to relieve a little bit of that, of course you went for it.
It's true though. It's all of that, but it's almost like if it's not just, we weren't just doing the three sports in high school, it's the clubs, the club leagues on top of being in high school and doing the high school sports. So the reason why I got a scholarship for lacrosse was not only was I playing high school lacrosse, I was playing the club lacrosse. Not only was the colleges that wanted me looking at my club stats, they were looking at my high school stats, the clubs that I was inside high school as well. Like they're looking at all of those things. And of course, you not only that, but your friends are like, you know, it's a constant one-upping competition. Like when you run in certain circles of friends, it's always like, well, this college is looking at me. Well, I'm in this club. Like, what are you doing on yours? Like, it's just constant. Like, and I feel like that's even how it is nowadays in high school. It's you have to look good all the time. Yeah. It's the constant, it's always expectations.
Right.
And that is one of the, you're honestly setting yourself up for failure automatically whenever you are setting yourself up for those high expectations. And I know that's what I was kind of doing, is having that perfection mentality all the time and never giving myself a break. It was, it didn't do me any justice. That's for sure. And that honestly, when I first tried that Adderall, I felt like Wonder Woman. Like I felt like I could do everything. I was able to keep up with all my classes. I was able to perform on the basketball court. I was able to not only do that, but play AAU basketball, get all my studies done, get straight A's, do my clubs. I was able to do everything.
Wow. Did you sleep?
I don't know. Oh my goodness. That is, whew. I don't know why I remember this specifically, but I'll never forget. It was like I had been taking Adderall for a couple months at this point. And I couldn't eat on it. I couldn't eat at all, pretty much. And I had started to lose a little bit of weight, and I was already, I was already like 142 and I'm 5'9" and a half. But I remember like there was being pizza in the fridge, and it was like 1 o'clock in the morning, and I couldn't sleep, and I was rolling around, and all I wanted to do was eat. And I went downstairs to get a piece of pizza at the fridge. And my dad goes, "What are you doing awake?" He was on the couch sleeping. And he's like, "What are you doing awake?" And I was like, "I'm hungry." A piece of pizza. He goes, "Why are you awake, Lauren?" And I was like, "I want a piece of pizza." And I could tell like he was thinking something in his head. He's just like, "I don't know why she's awake."
Yeah.
So it was, I don't know why I remember that specific situation, but I got kind of freaked out because I was like, "He knows. He knows. But I don't know if he actually knew, but
yeah. Well, I'm sure he did later.
Oh, yeah. They did later. They did.
So what happened after? So that was your junior year. Did you have access to Adderall for the rest of your high school career, or did you?
Oh yeah. Adderall's really, it was prevalent in high school.
So you didn't get a prescription?
No, not then. All my friends, like not all my friends, but a lot of them took it. So if I ever wanted, I could just ask for it. And at that time, my tolerance wasn't very high, so I could break them in half. There's a bunch of different ways. Like you can break them up or whatever, take the beads out. There's a whole bunch of different methods of taking them. And at that point, it was an issue because I wasn't prescribed it, but it hadn't become to the extent where I, looking back on it then, hadn't started using it recreationally yet.
Yeah.
And then it was senior year. And I started drinking a lot. My parents were fighting a lot. I had already verbally committed to University of Cincinnati for lacrosse scholarship. Mm-hmm. And that had already put strain on my parents because my dad wanted me to go to University of Maryland. My mom wanted me to go to JMU. And then I had also got in, it was UNC that also wanted me, but that wasn't even part of the discussion, but it was, they both didn't want me to go there.
Okay.
I wanted to go there because it was far away from home. I wanted to get out of there.
Yeah.
So that had already kind of put strain on the family, and my parents had already been fighting a lot. So that my senior year, I started drinking and partying a lot. So I started taking Adderall because I could drink more, I could party more. And I remember a couple times specifically that, I mean, I was drinking so much that I remember the one time I blacked out and my friends found me in a bush, a bush in the back of somebody's house. Like I was just passed out. And then there was another time that they had to hide me from my mom. Like I was that drunk. Like I had passed out on somebody's front lawn and they had to hide me in the basement of my friend's house. My mom, like it was a whole ordeal.
Oh gosh.
Yep. And then, so my senior year became a really big issue. Then my mom found my Adderall. I used to keep it in like a little Advil bottle.
Yeah.
And my mom knew something was going on. She saw, I guess, all the red flags. And my mom and I don't have the best relationship as it is. There's a lot going on there. I won't get into details about her. She yeah. has her own stuff. But she found it and she took it from me. And I didn't know she took it because I used to leave my purse by the end of my bed. And I woke up the next morning and I was like, it's gone. And I knew she took it. And I lost it on her. Like, I freaked out. And she put it in a little baggie in her purse. And I remember I went out and I dumped the beads out of the Adderall and I just ate it. But that's another story for another time. But yeah, so it became a really big issue. And then I spiraled really, really bad this summer going into college. I tried killing myself twice. They involuntarily committed me the second time. That was really bad. The second time was really bad. It was scary. I swallowed like 90 Tylenol PMs. I took my dad's car to Rite Aid and I used his credit card and I got him. And then after the first time,
you're crying. Yeah. Why did you want to kill yourself?
I don't know. Like I do know. I was so unhappy. At that point in time, things weren't good at home and, it was really bad.
Do you think and I just wanted the drinking made it worse or do you think you had a predisposition?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
Oh, I was major depressive disorder for sure. Okay. Major depressive disorder and bipolar. And at this point in time, I hadn't been diagnosed.
Okay.
That was something that another thing that we didn't really believe in was mental illness.
I'm so sorry, Lauren. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. I mean, looking back on it now, like everything, like the cliche, everything happens for a reason. It is what it is, but.
I know, but I just wish, yeah, if they had more resources and known what was going on with you and that you weren't a bad girl, you know, you weren't a bad girl. You were having so much emotional turmoil and self-hatred that you would rather not even be here. Well, thank God it didn't work.
Yeah, so, it was not good.
The second time you were committed to a facility, you got out. Where'd you go after that?
So I'll never forget driving in the car with the reason why I did it the second time was because I thought my mom wasn't going to let me go to college. And I was so upset because I had been so depressed all summer, so depressed. Things had been changing so rapidly. And all I remember was we went to my dad's, we had a lake house in Solomon's Island. And I remember going to the lake and I didn't want to go. And I just remember this was back when we had CD players. And I just remember taking my CD player and my iPod, my little clunky iPod. And I just sat in the room and just listened to it was Panic at the Disco and Fall Out Boy the whole time. And I didn't leave the room because I was just so depressed. And then my mom told me, she goes, you're not going to college. She's like, you're not going. She's like, you have an issue with Adderall. You need to go to rehab. And I was like, if you think I'm not going to college, you're crazy. I will kill myself. I will kill myself or I'm going to college. And she's like, she flipped out in the car. And 3 days later, I tried to kill myself. And the only reason why, it was a couple reasons why I actually didn't go through it. Well, it didn't happen is because my friend Sarah, my best friend Sarah, I group texted all of my friends and I had a lot in high school. And it was crazy because none of them realized what I was saying. It was only one person and Sarah did. Sarah knew that it was a suicide text. And she's like, where are you right now? What are you doing? She's like, I'm coming over. And she flew over. She pulled up in the house and there was already an ambulance out front. Because my dad called 911. Because he caught me. I ran in his room and I was like, Dad, I just did something really stupid. I just swallowed 90 Tylenol PM. He goes, I've never seen him jump up so fast in his life. At this point in time, my parents weren't even sleeping in the same bed anymore. The marriage was pretty much over. So yeah, that happened. I still went to college the next month. And
do you have any mental health help or any counseling or therapy?
No. My mom tried to get me to go see a counselor after that for the 2 weeks going up to going to college. But it was her friend from school's husband, and I knew that none of that was going to be confidential. So
absolutely. Yeah.
I was like, nope, I'm not talking to you.
Yeah.
That was a whole different, another ordeal. My freshman year of college, this is something I don't even think anybody at U-Turn knows, but my freshman year was fall ball. I started in lacrosse. Fall ball went great. I was performing. I was doing really well. I was also partying every single night. Mm-hmm. We would wake up at 4 or 5 a.m. for weightlifting and conditioning and then practice, and I'd be hungover or I'd be drinking a beer. Yeah. I would be cracking open a beer and drinking it before. Then it started showing like over the winter. Winter wasn't bad, but then I started gaining weight, which that wasn't a good look. I also was doing a little bit of Adderall. It was actually surprisingly harder to get in Ohio.
Uh-huh.
Then I started becoming bulimic because of all of this. Because again, my perfectionism started coming out. And it freaked me out. I was like, my coaches said something about my weight. They said they noticed me partying a lot. And then I became second string. That was devastating. So by the end of my freshman year, I was totally and utterly crushed. I wanted to go. I called my dad like a week early and I was like, can you come pick me up? I'm ready to go home. And, went home.
With your mom and dad at that point or just your dad?
Just my dad. So my dad and I are super close.
That's great.
Yeah. He's like the one person in the whole world that he has stuck by me through everything, no matter what I've done.
How wonderful.
I know.
We all need one person to believe in us. And I think it makes life worth living, right?
I mean,
I don't know your dad, but I love your dad.
You have no idea. Like, I mean, whenever I burned all of my bridges, he's the only person that still answer my
You're making
phone.
Me cry.
I know. You have no idea. Like, I start bawling right now. But then a week after I got home from freshman year, my parents sat us down and they said they were getting a divorce. And I just dipped out. I was like, I can't even handle this. I was like, I am so gone. I was like, I'm out. I moved in with my friend Sarah. And I didn't go back to school. I called my coaches and I was like, I'm not coming back.
Right.
Like, I'm not going back. I'm all set. So I ended up waitressing in Bel Air, like where I grew up. And I started back on the Adderall so hard. It wasn't even funny. I was working I was making bank waitressing at the lodge. I was making so much money. I was doing so much Adderall. I had a fake ID. So we were going down to Baltimore and drinking our faces off. It became so bad. And then my parents had an intervention, or should I say my mom had an intervention, and my dad was just there. My dad's very, he doesn't say a lot, but when he does he uses his words wisely. My parents had an intervention number one. They gave me a choice. Either I could join the Coast Guard or go to St. Joseph's Institute in Matilda, Pennsylvania, or Port Matilda.
Wonderful
Pennsylvania.
Options there. Just, you know, either
and
or.
You're out your mind if you think I'm joining the Coast Guard.
Yeah.
You were 19.
You were 19 at the time?
Yeah. And okay. I was like, okay. I was like, send me to rehab. Yeah. So I went to rehab, and 2 days into rehab, this is how manipulating I was. I told them I was into Coke real bad. I was like, yeah, Coke is my drug of choice. And I was like, but I have really bad ADHD. I need like something for that. And he goes, well, we can prescribe you Vyvanse here. I was like, perfect. So 2 days into rehab, I got prescribed Vyvanse. So 30 days wow. later, my mom, yeah, 30 days later, my mom picked us up, and my parents paid for rehab. It wasn't, insurance didn't pay for it this time. My mom picks us up, and she go, and we're driving back, and I'm like, hey, mom, look what I got. And she's like, what? And I'm like, I got prescribed Vyvanse. She's like, what? She lost it.
She lost her collateral addiction. Oh my God. I've yep. never heard of anyone getting prescribed that in rehab. Did they yep. not look back over your history? I guess not.
I have no idea, but it was a solid win. Like, I went there, I was so pissed they did an intervention. I was so
you
angry.
You should have done, Lauren.
I was so angry back then. Like, I didn't realize how angry of a person I was until like, you know, I did really intense therapy a couple years ago. Yeah. Years ago. But yeah, so that was rehab number one. I got back from that. And then I went down to Wilmington, North Carolina, to do the whole halfway house thing. Yeah. Still doing Vyvanse. It was a joke. like that whole time of my life was such a, almost like a blur. It's like I was, I was trying to find myself, and I had lost everything that I was, because before in high school and stuff, I identified as an athlete, as a student, right. as a sister, a daughter. And I just had lost all of that. I didn't know who I was. And I feel like drugs kind of took that away from me, or Adderall kind of took that away from me. I didn't know who I was.
Right.
So then came up intervention number two. And I got sent to there was another rehab in Pennsylvania again. And again, I got the choice, military or rehab. And I said, rehab. So again, went to rehab. This time afterwards, I went to stay with my aunt in Delaware, who's, she's also in AA. That lasted for a whole 2 months when she said she couldn't handle me anymore. which that made me feel great. I was like,
I bet.
There is something innately wrong with me,
right.
Which there was. I was definitely a hot mess still. Like, rehab did nothing for me. I wasn't ready to change. I didn't want to change. I wasn't ready for it yet. I hadn't hit rock bottom. There was always an out for me. It was either, there was literally always an out.
Yeah.
My aunt Mia, I flew out to Texas actually. Cause my aunt Mia was like, let me have a shot. And I flew out there, and then 2 months in, my aunt Mia was like, listen, we need to do something. She's like, what do you think about the military? And she actually asked me a question. She's like, you grew up doing basketball, lacrosse, soccer. She's like, you've always been on a team. What do you have against the military? Why haven't you ever thought about it? And I was like, I don't know. I didn't really think about it like that. No one's really ever asked me. It was always this or that, like do it or don't do it, like do this or do that. So I was like, honestly, I was like, I'm not opposed. And I think a part of me didn't want to do it because my mom told me to do it or like
yeah,
do this.
She didn't give you a choice. If it's your choice, you might choose it.
Yeah. So I was like, honestly, I was like, that actually kind of sounds kind of cool. You know, you have the PT aspect, you have the team aspect. So literally the next week I enlisted. I was like, let's do it. Of course, then I screwed that up. Adderall screwed that up. I was at TC, and then I went to Texas Christian University. I was doing ROTC there,
mm-hmm.
trying to get my commission. And again, I was, oh my God, that was a lot. I was doing 21 credits while doing ROTC. so it was a lot. And I was, again, I started partying that summer. I was partying my butt off. I started doing some stupid stuff. And then one of the guys that, I was seeing, he was taking Adderall, and I was like, you know what? I haven't done this in a while. I was like, this is before we went out. I'll try it. What? I was like, I've done it forever. It's been like 6 years. I was like, I'm fine. And I forgot how much I liked it. Like,
yeah.
And that was like the real, and looking back on it, that is the part where that point in time is whenever there's like no denying it. That is how I know that is a straight up addiction, because of that part right there.
Yeah.
There's no denying that is my addiction, because there was no going back after that. Like, I couldn't wake up in the morning without it.
Right.
You know how, like, what people say, whenever you relapse, you go down twice as hard, it goes twice as fast. Oh my God. I mean, that was in the summertime. By January, I was a full blown, couldn't wake up with Adderall, couldn't function, couldn't go to school, nothing. If I wasn't taking it, I was in bed.
Yeah.
This was the same year. What year was this? This was like 2000 and I want to say it was 2014, maybe 2013. Mm-hmm. This was the year they started reducing forces like significantly overseas. Mm-hmm. So this was the first year that as well that they also did a random drug test in all the cadets. So they didn't tell my commanding officer, usually gets alerted first when they're going to do a random drug test. And he really liked our class. So he would have told us. He had no idea. So we're at PT and they say, hey, everybody, report to the hall or whatever after PT, and I'm not thinking anything of it. We get back there. They go, okay, guys, we're doing drug tests. Everybody put your names on these. And I'm like, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to fail.
But Lauren, it's legal.
What? One, in the military, you're not allowed to be on. I mean, you can't be on Adderall or any. I mean, I just stopped my Wellbutrin at this point. I had to stop my at that point in time, I was on Wellbutrin and Topamax. So I had to stop both of those. And you can't be on Adderall or any of that kind of stuff, especially if you're prior enlisted without a doctor's note. And I definitely was not prescribed it.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So I tested positive for Adderall. And I knew once that those results came back, I just stopped showing up. I was like, yep, they're going to dishonorably discharge me. I am not coming back. So I stopped showing up to class. I stopped showing up to the military. I just was like, I'm done. I'm a runner. So I just ran. And then my downward spiral in Texas happened. I started bartending in Fort Worth and in Dallas, and just kicked up my Adderall game some more. And then when things got bad in Texas, I went automatically home to Maryland. And that's where I hit my criminal activities. And they got really, really, really bad. Really, really fast. I got a really good job, in Maryland, in sales. And, it was for a home remodeling company, and I actually loved it. I was really freaking good at it.
I bet you were.
I was really good at it. And I loved it. The company I worked for, I loved it. Yeah. And I don't know. And I was making really good money, but I was making horrible decisions. I was taking, and this is no lie, I was taking around anywhere from 280 to 320 milligrams of Adderall a day.
Whew, that makes my heart want to stop just hearing it.
Yep. I don't know how mine didn't.
I don't either.
I really
That's
don't.
Crazy. And I don't know how you ever slept.
So Xanax.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Yeah.
That's real healthy with the heart. I mean, we all did it, but you know, the speed and then the.
No, it was so unhealthy. And I had gotten into such a depressed state that I was in such a bad state of mind. Like, there would be days if I was off work, I wouldn't get out of bed. Like, I had a couple, it was all guys in the company. I was like one of like three girls. And the guys, cause I lived in Canton, And so like, it's all very close. So like, mm-hmm. I would have like three of my best guy friends, they would come over and check on me on the days we didn't have work, because I would just fall off the grid, because I would just go into a coma. I didn't function. And it was so, and then I'll never forget the one time I didn't have any Xanax, and I've never had a panic attack in my life. And I had a panic attack. Like, I've never felt that way. I never want to feel that way again. It felt like it was weird. It was the weirdest feeling. I had to call 911 and everything. And it was whenever I got to the hospital, and I looked like a crazy person. Like, it just was weird. But the people in the hospital, the way they looked at me, you could tell that they were like, this girl's an addict. Like, she 100% is. But yeah, it was wild. But anyways, so that's when I'll never forget the point of no return for me. The point of no return was when I had spent all my money on Adderall, all of it on Adderall, and all of it on things that I didn't need, because I was just...
Right.
I was almost addicted to shopping because I was trying to fill a void. I was trying to fill a void that I didn't have. My point of no return was I used my sister's identity. I used my sister's identity. I got a checkbook in her name because I don't even remember what it was for. It was something really stupid. But that was the point of no return. That's whenever I crossed the line into the blurriness. And I still remember that, because I was like, honestly, I was like, I did this already. I'm just going to keep going. Like,
right. What's the point of ever trying to come back from that? I can see that mindset. Yeah.
And that's how I was trying to escape
your feelings is what you were trying to do with all of that, is escape your pain.
And that's when people tell me, like, whenever I talk to like, even some of my clients about like, therapy and stuff like that, because what I learned in like, because I do, therapy is what saved my life.
Yeah.
My whole entire life, I spent shoving my feelings down. My whole entire life, that's all I did, was put my feelings down. I always had the smile on my face. I was always this happy-go-lucky person. I never showed anything but that. And then because I'd never realized how angry of a person I was until I started lashing out doing those things.
Yeah.
And that's when I realized how angry and how sad and how lonely I was. Mm-hmm. And I tried to fill all of that by doing this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I went on a frenzy. Like, it was crazy. So I started doing Airbnbs. And in one of the Airbnbs, and this, I swear, this is like one of those, I don't know if anybody, like, whatever you believe your higher power is. And I feel like this was him kind of telling me, like, kind of setting me up for my rock bottom.
Yeah.
There was a company checkbook. It was like one of those big binders in one of the Airbnbs.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So I found it and I used it. I used all of those checks, all of them. And I was using them in different states. I knew I was going to get caught. Like, it was only a matter of time. It was bad. I bought a house. I bought a car. It was a lot of money.
You were going to go out in style. I mean,
yeah,
you know.
Trust me. I did. And it was, I went out in style. All right. It was not good.
When did you get caught? I mean, how did you get caught?
Oh man.
Taking a bath in a big tub somewhere in a big mansion.
And this is like the twisted part. Like, I knew that I was going to get caught, and I had gotten, so this is how much like Adderall, it was almost to the point, like I was coming up with stories, like whatever I had gotten so twisted in my head, like my mind was so twisted up. Like, I mean, just, I look back on now and no wonder I was so exhausted all the time, because I don't even know how people believed me whenever I did talk, because I look back on it, I'm like, how did people even believe me of like some of the things that I said? How did they even believe what came out of my mouth? Because I said some outlandish things for people to believe. I mean, so in the house in Ohio, I had about 20 cameras set up outside the house because I knew the FBI was watching me. I knew it. Like, I have two aunts in the FBI. My grandfather was like the head of one of the departments or whatever, but like I have two aunts. I knew that they were watching me. The one night I called my one aunt and I was like, Amber, I think the FBI is watching me. She's like, well, why would they be watching you, Lauren? I was like, oh, that's confirmation enough. Thank you. Like, she can't tell me that they are, but yeah. Like, I knew that they were. But I was so paranoid. And I was in such a dark place that, like, and I had come up with all these stupid stories about, like, why the checks started bouncing. The one morning I woke up and my account was like negative $99,000, like 200 some dollars, because the company had found out that I'd been using their checks.
Oh my God.
My co-defendant's account was like negative like $159,000. Like, it was not good. And I was like, okay, this is the end of the end. But I was in such a dark place that, like, I mean, I had my suicide planned out. Like, I had planned it down to a T. I was like, when they went, because I had all the cameras outside, I was like, whenever I see them start to breach that front door, I'm going up to the banister. And I'm like, I had everything planned out. Because I just knew what was going to happen. And I think right. That's ultimately what I wanted to do anyways. But I was just so lost. Like, so lost in my, just like, looking back on it now, it's just like, at this point in time, I had cut everybody out of my life. Like, mm-hmm. I had nobody. The only person that still talked to me was my dad. And I think he would check in on me to make sure I was still alive.
Yeah. Like,
at this point in time, also, everybody found out that I stole my sister's identity. So my whole family had cut me out.
Yeah.
Everybody. I had nobody left. So yeah. And, I flew out to Massachusetts. And where was it? Oh, and I was going up. So Matt was in Ohio and I flew out to Massachusetts and I thought I was being slick and I put a hotel in a different name and I was going up the escalator and two cops came, two detectives, one came on each side of me and they said, so are you Lauren Houck today or Lauren Lombardi? And of course my smart ass, I was like, which one do you want me to be?
Oh my God.
Yeah. So that was great. Really set me up for success. And then I got taken back to the Newton Police Department and it was January 18th of, this was 2017, I believe. That weekend it was a blizzard. And they only had a cement, like it was a little jail. So they had a cement blocks and it was so cold, but I'll never forget. I sat there and I was coming down off all the Adderall and I wish I had my mugshot to show you guys, but from when I got to the Rhode Island prison, cause I had to sign, I called my New York attorney and I asked him what I should do because I had no idea. I was a fugitive from justice from Rhode Island because that's where the majority of my charges were from. But I was wanted in Massachusetts, Ohio, I think New Jersey and Rhode Island, mm-hmm. And Maryland. But, I sat in that jail cell and I'll never forget the feeling. Cause this is like today what makes me so I never want to feel that again, ever again in my life.
Yeah.
I sat in that jail cell and I had hair extensions in. This is my real hair, by the way, mm-hmm. but I had hair extensions in and I sat there and I ripped out every single one of my hair extensions. And then I took my eyelashes and I ripped out all of my eyelashes. So mm-hmm. I had no eyelashes. And you know, in Toy Story, the little Chucky doll.
Yeah.
Like Sid holds the doll with like the missing patches of hair.
Right, right, right.
That's what I looked like.
Oh,
I scared
wow.
you that. So whenever they were transporting me, God, and I weighed at this point in time, like I said, I'm 5'9" and a half. I weighed 125 pounds soaking.
Wow.
So whenever I got to Rhode Island, I'll have to find a picture and show it to you, but they called me, my nickname there was the Mad Hatter.
Wow.
I was in such a bad place when I got to the Rhode Island prison. I was there for 6 months in state prison awaiting for the feds to pick up my charges. I mean, got my first 2 months there. I was in the shoe most of the time. I bit a lieutenant's hand. I spit in the CO's faces. Like, I tried to kill myself 3 times. And like, I'm talking like, I still have like scars from it. I was in the turtle suit more times than I can count.
What's a turtle suit?
So when you try to kill yourself, they put you in the turtle suit. It's this big Velcro suit. Like, it's literally, you have to strip down and it's literally made of Velcro.
Oh my gosh.
It's like a, it's like a bulletproof vest, but it's Velcro. Wow. It's not comfortable at all. And they don't give you anything, no silverware, like nothing to eat with. You have to use your hands. And they used to make fun of me, because I was so crazy, that they would give me applesauce. Because they knew I didn't have any silverware. They all hated me. I was so crazy. And they couldn't get my medications right. And my brain was so messed up because I was just so crazy. I was off my rocker. Like, I was so mentally unstable. Just, right. It was, my brain was so messed up.
You needed mental health care. You did not need to be locked away like that at this point. God. Yeah.
And I was, and the only, so I'll never forget, there was, and this is one of the reasons why I work at U-Turn. Just one of the reasons. There was a social worker there. This is going to make me cry. There was one social worker there. I will never forget her for the rest of my life. Oh my God. So she's the reason why I'm still alive. So like I said, my dad, he was the only person that was still talking to me. Well, let me blow my nose really quick. Okay.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay. So there was one social worker there. And she let me call her Jen. So my dad was the only person that still talked to me. And my dad loves me so much. I knew that I could manipulate him enough to bail me out. My bail was $4,000, and that's with a bail's bondsman. I think it was over $100,000 with surety. So he would have to spend $4,000 that he would not get back. And basically, my goal was, if I got out of there, I was going to kill myself because I knew how much trouble I was in. He called Jen. And I'd been talking to Jen, and I told her, she knew how messed up I was. I confided in her, like, I told her, like, my whole life story and stuff. And she's like, if you stay here, she's like, I will work with you. She's like, I will help you get through this. I will help you get your medications right. She's like, I will be here for you. She's like, I will figure out how to get you out of here, get you into rehab, whatever you need. She's like, but I need you to stay. And I was like, I'm sorry. I was like, but my dad's bailing me out. And I was like, and I can get help on the outside. He'll help me get into rehab. Like, yeah. just telling her what she needs to hear.
Right.
Well, she reached out to my dad. My dad didn't answer. And then I guess he got her voicemail. But I called my dad, talked to him. He's like, he basically told me he was going to bail me out. So I guess he called her back. She answered and she told him, she goes, I'm telling you right now, if you bail her out, she's going to kill herself. And the morning that I thought he was going to bail me out, I got all ready. I put all my stuff together thinking, I'm like, I'm telling everybody I'm getting out of here. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I didn't get the phone call. He didn't bail me out. It literally saved my life.
Yeah.
And she was so true to her word. Over the next 6 months, those were the worst 6 months of my life by far. The worst 6 months of my life. But she helped me get my medications as correct as they could be in state prison. She's the reason why I even got out of there. So to kind of give you some background on state prisons and getting out into a rehab, I was a flight risk. I didn't have any Rhode Island address. I didn't even have a permanent address, period. So in order for you to be released into a rehab or anywhere in Rhode Island, you have to have an address on file. She put her address down. has a permanent address so I could get out.
Wow. What a sweetie. Where is this woman?
We know.
I just did a blog on the Real Angels of Recovery, and I wish we could have featured her in there.
Or like, oh my God, it was just, I'll never forget that. Because, I mean, like, nobody does that. Like, she put, like, on my insurance card, because in order to get Rhode Island State Insurance to go to a state rehab, you have to have an address, and she put her address on my insurance card.
Wow.
And, I mean, I saw her twice a week. And yeah, I mean, she literally changed my life because I wouldn't, granted, I had to go to, I got kicked out of the first rehab that I left when I left state prison. And then I got kicked out of the second one, but the third one worked.
Good.
But yeah, I think it's, yeah. But then, and then after that, I went to my mom's awaiting trial for federal, prison. But yeah, so.
So is that behind you now, or are you still waiting for trial?
No, no. So, I did three rehabs, back 1 month each, when I was in Rhode Island. I think, not to make myself excuse for myself, I honestly think I was terrified. I knew the feds were going to pick up my case. And I was acting out hardcore. And when I got the phone call that the feds were picking up my case, I was devastated. But it actually ended up working out to my favor, because of if the state would have kept it, I would have done a lot more time. And at this point in time, my mom and I had started talking again. So we were trying to like repair our relationship. She said I could come back and stay with her in Maryland, until, my trial or until whatever happened. So I went back to Maryland, and that ended up being the best thing for me because I got back there and I was on pretrial for the feds, and what COVID happened. Granted, like I said, mom and I don't really get along. So that was terrifying in a way because it was her and I and then my other little sister in her apartment because my mom was a teacher. So we were all home together like 24/7, and it was definitely not ideal, but we made the best of it. And my therapist, I couldn't drive a car. I wasn't really allowed to go very far.
Right.
But my therapist that I had, Dr. Lisa, I saw her twice a week for an hour. It was amazing. She also changed my life. Another changing point for me was therapy. That is what helped me work through my anger, my aggression. Don't get me wrong. I'm definitely not, all sunshine and roses. Now I'm not as angry as I used to be. I've worked through a lot of my trauma in my past. And I've worked through a lot of my issues, but I still go to therapy now.
Good. We all need therapy, and no one is ever, this is a journey. The destination isn't perfection. The destination is just to live a healthy, balanced life. And
yes,
you're doing that. So take us back. So you went through trial, the charges were dropped or reduced or?
Oh no. So the state dropped their charges so the feds could pick them up.
Yeah.
The feds picked up the charges. I was on pretrial.
Okay.
Which means that we were trying to, when the feds prosecute you, 99% of the time they get you. So it was, we did a proffer, which means that I gave them everything that they had on me. Like I basically told them, yes, I did X, Y, and Z. You might not even know about X, Y, and Z, but I did that too.
Yeah.
Just leave it all on the table for them. I gave them up more than they even had on me, which actually benefited me in the long run. So they gave me, we made a deal with them. They dropped one of the charges. And then, so I only had one charge and it was a mandatory minimum of 2 years, but also a mandatory maximum of 2 years. And it was a federal camp.
Okay.
So I was going to Danbury in Connecticut. And so, I was awaiting going to Danbury, but COVID hit. So I had to wait. And that's when I did therapy and everything. And then my surrender date was, God, I don't even know when that was. That was a while ago. It was, I would have to think about that. Cause I got out April 23rd of 2021.
Mm-hmm.
2021, I got out. And then I did 9 months on home confinement. I just finished that last January of 9 months of home confinement.
Congratulations. Yeah. Yep. So are you living on your own? Where do you live now?
And this isn't like, it's always baby steps, but looking back on it, it's crazy how much those baby steps make big strides when you like look back on them. In the past year, I have gotten a vehicle. I live by myself now. I live with my roommates. I have two roommates. I have a dog. Well, I've had a dog. I got a dog during COVID.
Sweet. What kind of dog? Yeah.
It's a Shiba. He's a Shiba Inu. He's sleeping right now. He's my baby. It's crazy. Like, this has just been in the past less than a year. It's been an amazing year. I mean, I talk to my sister now, the one whose identity I stole on a regular basis. My mom and I our relationship's getting better. My other little sister, I'm super close with. My brother was my best friend growing up, and him and I talk regularly. I'm also really close to my dad as usual. It's been one hell of a ride. That's for sure.
I know your dad is so proud of you, Lauren. Oh my gosh. To watch all of that that you've come through. And so you came to work at U-Turn Health, and tell me who you work with, because it seems like you would be so perfectly paired with women who are in the system right now, helping them navigate it the same way the social worker did for you. Is that what you do?
So yeah, I work with the reentry side. So I'm on Ryan's team. Uh-huh. I work with, Pinal County, Hope for Prisoners. That's one of my favorites.
You work with women or men or both?
Both.
Okay. And yep. Do you help them? Can you help them find jobs? What's your?
So anything that they need, I help with, whatever they need, housing, help them look for jobs, support. The number one thing that I want to be for them is their support. Support them in whatever they need, in whatever capacity they need me to be.
You may be that one person that believes in them. Like, you have your dad, and then you had the social worker. You are filling the void because a lot of those people probably do not have a support system, or else they might not have ended up where they are. And how beautiful is
that? And that's what I can honestly say. So like, whenever I was in, I can't tell you how many girls don't have anybody. It's crazy. Like, I had one of my bunkies, she would never get on the phone. So like, phones were treasured when you were in. Treasured. Sure. And she was always really quiet. And she never would get on the phone. And I'll never forget one time asking her, like, I was like, you never get on the phone. And she'd be like, I have nobody to call. And like, that's sad. That is really sad.
Yeah.
Like little things like that. That's really sad. And also like just like I did, I burned all my bridges whenever I went in. I burned everybody. So like, that's why, like, I'll be your support until you can build your support up. I'll be that tool for you. Like, until you do.
Yeah.
I will be that person.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Do you consider yourself in recovery from addiction or substance use disorder? Or do you use any substances now, or just the medications?
Definitely medications. Medications, I would be a crazy person without them. I'm a very big believer in medication management. I think that that is very important, especially to mental health.
Yep.
That is for sure. As far as being in recovery, I definitely classify myself as being in recovery, because I don't think, I know myself, I can't touch Adderall ever again. I can be, surprisingly now though, I can be around it and it doesn't even faze me. which is crazy. Like 6 years ago, I could never say that. But
when one of my roommates around it, like, how are you around it? Like, you just know people.
My roommates prescribed.
Oh, okay. All right.
And yeah, it doesn't bother me. Like,
hole again. You cannot go down that hole again.
That's what I'm saying. Like, it's, whenever I hit my rock bottom, like,
yeah.
Anytime, like, I never even think about doing it ever again. But, like, if I even would think about it, I will never forget how it felt being in that jail cell. Never will forget that. And I know that if I was to do it again, I would end up back there and worse. And it just, that's not it. I'm all set. But
we
no,
need
like
you here at U-Turn Health. We need you.
No, I'm not leaving anytime soon.
Your clients need you.
I'm not going anywhere. So it doesn't bother me anymore because I feel like in the past, because I've been 6 years clean now, and I feel like I am. Thank you. I do. I feel like I am very. I'm very. I don't feel like I don't need that anymore. I feel like I filled the void. I've been filling the void now, and whereas before I needed it to fill the void, and now I don't need that.
Exactly.
So it's been really cool to experience that. And that's what I want for others. And I think that's another reason why I work for U-Turn is because I know that I can do it. And I know that everybody else can do it too. They just need someone to help them.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, Lauren, we're coming up on an hour, but I just want you to know that sharing your heart today has touched me, and it's going to touch so many different people because you're still very raw and open with it. And, you know, I hope you stay that way because it's such a beautiful gift to give to other people, showing them that you're human, you're vulnerable, but that you have overcome. And that is just such a beautiful story. Is there any last word you would like to leave with someone who's maybe either, I mean, sitting in prison or waiting a trial or someone who just doesn't think that they can quit Adderall? Any words for them?
God, I have so many words for them, but I promise you can get through it. Like, that's so hard.
It's hard to put in a nutshell.
It's so hard to put into words.
I always say, if I can do it, anybody can.
It's true, though, because, I mean, if you saw where I was hopeless. I was once hopeless.
You know, it'd be great, Lauren, if we could find a picture of the Mad Hatter and put it next to your picture now on the.
No, and that's what I want to do. I'm telling you right now.
We'll link it in the bio if you find it. We'll link it in
I'll even reach out because, like, my mom, that picture is. I look like the Sid doll. It's so bad. Like, imagine me.
I don't want to make you relive that, but sometimes it's very.
Oh, no, it's fine. It's a nice little refresher.
Yeah.
It's a nice little refresher.
But anyway, well, I've loved getting to know you, Lauren. Thank you so much for spending time with us today. You learn, you turn. And with that, we'll see everybody next week. Bye.